Let's go ahead and turn in our Bibles to the book of Jonah, chapter 1. When you get there, say, Jonah, 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 what was you thinking? Over there? All right, we'll get to our verses in a minute. I remember as a kid, and I'm sure some of you, well, most of you were adults when I was a kid, but I remember as a kid when they would televise the Billy Graham evangelistic crusades on TV. They would start with some music, and then Billy Graham would come on stage to the pulpit and he would preach a sermon, and when he was done, they would you would see hundreds of people flock down to the stage or the altar to give their lives to the Lord. Back in 1997, I got a copy of a book called Just As I Am. Just As I Am is the autobiography of Billy Graham's life. This thing's about 700 and some pages. It's a nice, big, thick book. Good reading, great reading. In that book, it talked a lot about the things that went on leading up to the Crusades. When you saw what you saw when you watched the Crusades on TV was nothing compared to what went on prior to the Crusade itself. I mean, the preparations for a Billy Graham Crusade takes place, you know, a year, 2 years before the Crusade itself. They will have multitudes of people in various churches and locations having prayer for months and months before these Crusades. And there would be a whole staff of people that would be assigned to making all of the arrangements for whatever that facility would be that the crusade would be held in. And then you've got all the people that wanted to work in the crusades, and so they would have to go through fairly extensive training to be prepared to work in the crusades. There would be all the materials that would need to be printed. You'd have all the advertisement being done. Travel arrangements for Billy and his team to travel, and hotel accommodations. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on of all the things that people would need to do prior to the crusade itself. And none of those things even included the battles and the difficulties and the roadblocks that they would experience in their preparing for the crusade. And as I read that book, Just As I Am, and as I read about a lot of the things that had taken place prior to those crusades, none of those even come close to comparing to the things that happened leading up to the evangelistic crusade that God called Jonah to have in the city of Nineveh. And as a side note, the crusade that took place in Nineveh is considered to be one of the most, how would I word it? They probably had more salvations in that Nineveh crusade than any crusade in history. I mean, it's been estimated up to 600,000 people. Now, first of all, as we saw last week, when God called Jonah to go to Nineveh and warn them about his coming judgment, Jonah rebelled. And he went down to a seaport town of Joppa. And he got on a boat and he headed, his plan was to head a couple thousand miles towards the opposite direction that God was calling him to go. Jonah did not like the ideal that God was calling him to go and preach the gospel to the people of Nineveh, because the people of Nineveh were very wicked. They was very brutal towards the Jewish people. And so Jonah felt that the Ninevites deserved God's judgment, not his salvation. And that is why it says there in verse 3 of Jonah chapter 1 that Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. It says he went down to Joppa. He found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare. He went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Now, as I read that, I got to thinking, here's God. He's omniscient. He knows all things. And so if God knows all things, then he obviously knew beforehand that Jonah would rebel against the call. And so why did God even bother calling Jonah to this specific mission, since he knew beforehand Jonah would rebel? If God knew that Jonah would reject his call, why didn't God just like choose somebody else that he knew that would be willing to obey? I mean, think about it from your perspective. If you're going to ask somebody to do something, wouldn't you pick somebody that you knew was willing to help, instead of trying to pick somebody that you know is just going to be a big fat jerk about it? I think one of the reasons God chose Jonah, even though he knew Jonah would rebel, was because Jonah was part of a bigger picture. God had called the nation of Israel to be his voice of salvation to the surrounding nations. But the people of Israel saw themselves to be better than the people in the nations around them. And it resulted in their hearts growing cold toward Gentiles. And so the nation as a whole had rebelled against God's mission for them. Israel was to be God's messengers of compassion, but they failed to have compassion. The Jews believed that they deserved God's favor, and everyone else was unworthy of God's favor. And so Jonah was part of a bigger picture in the sense that he represented the people of Israel, and the Ninevites represented the Gentile nations around Israel. And this story is a reminder to Israel that their God-given missionary purpose. Now, if you're familiar with the rest of the story of Jonah, you know that he ended up going to Nineveh. He proclaimed God's coming judgment upon them, and the whole city placed their faith in the Lord. And so I think it would be safe to say that at some point, Jonah returned to Israel, and he had to tell them that he had gone and shared the gospel with their greatest enemy, and God saved them. But I think the picture is bigger than that. I think as God looked down the corridor of time, he saw that there was a time when the church would become lukewarm. And he saw that the church as a whole would lose their heart for the lost people around them. God calls his people to be his voice of salvation to those around them. But we have a tendency to think, or we have a tendency to just sort of to brush that call off, as if maybe God's judgment isn't real, or maybe it just isn't really eternal. See, the proof of that is seen in the fact that we Christians are around people every day that are always just a breath away from an eternal hell. Yet we can't even think of the last time we shared the gospel. I think Jonah reflects the attitude of a lot of God's children, where they will go to the extremes to avoid carrying out what God has called them to do. And so as we enter verse 4, we see that God will let his people run from their mission for a while. Verse 4 says, "Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship was about to be broken up." And so I don't know if you remember from last week, we talked about Jonah's hometown. Jonah lived in a town called Gath-Hepher when God had called him to go up to Nineveh. So Jonah rejects God's call, God allows him to leave his home. He allows Jonah to spend 3-4 days traveling about 50 miles from his hometown of Gath-Hepher down to the town of Joppa on the coastline. He spends 3-4 days on a 50-mile journey going there. And then God lets him, once he gets to Joppa, God lets him get on a boat and begin to head across the Mediterranean Sea. The boat sets sail. He gets to some unknown distance out in the open water. And then God sends the storm. When you've read this story, do you ever stop to think, God could have prevented Jonah from ever leaving his hometown of Gath-Hepher? He could have caused, you know, some kind of a family emergency. He could have brought maybe some kind of an illness on Jonah that would have kept Jonah from ever leaving Gath-Hepher. But God didn't. God could have caused something to happen to Jonah while he was on his way down to Joppa. He could have maybe kicked up some sand or some dust storm that would have had him have to, would have caused him to have to turn around and go back home. Or maybe God could have had a group of bandits come out and rob Jonah of his money so that when he got the Joppa, he wouldn't be able to pay the fare to get on the boat. But God didn't do it. God could have had the boat leave the port the day before Jonah got there. God could have caused some kind of damage to the ship so it wouldn't even be able to set out to sea. But God didn't do it. And so God could have done any number of things to keep Jonah from getting on that boat. But instead, God simply got out of Jonah's way and let him run. Let's look at verse 5. Then the sailors were afraid and each cried out to his own God. And they threw the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten the load. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. God had allowed Jonah to run long enough in his rebellion that he got comfortable enough to go to sleep. I think Jonah, probably like some of us, probably figured if, since God hadn't done anything to him yet, then he's probably getting away with his rebellion. But what Jonah did not realize was that God had plans for using his rebellion for good. Look at verse 5 again. Then the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God. God was using the storm as a means to get those Gentile sailors to call upon their God to save them so that they would realize that their gods was useless. And then it says they threw the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten the load. Once they realized that their God could not save them, they began to depend upon their own efforts to save themselves. When that didn't seem to be working, we're told in verse 6 that while Jonah was asleep, it says in verse 6 that the captain went down to him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call your God. Maybe he will take notice of us and we will not perish." Folks, here's the captain and his team of sailors. They were just frantic because they had lost their ability to navigate their boat. And so they thought they were about to die, but what they did not know was God was divinely steering the ship. God was using Jonah's rebellion as a means to show these sailors who the real God was, and who that real God was that could save them from perishing. Verses 7 through 9. And they said to one another, "Come, let us cast lots, that we may know for whose cause this trouble has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Verse 8. So they asked Jonah, tell us, who's responsible for making all of this trouble for us? What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you? And Jonah says to them, I'm a Hebrew. I fear the Lord, the God of heaven who made the sea and the dry land. You know what Jonah just did there in verse 9? He told them about a God that was bigger than all of their gods and bigger than all of their problems. I want to paraphrase for you what Jonah just said to them in verse 9. Jonah essentially said to them, guys, I'm a Hebrew, and my God is Jehovah, the self-existent God, who is Elohim, the divine one of the universe, who is not a local deity that can be confined to a statue, a sculpture, or a wooden idol that you can put on a shelf or a mantle. Instead, he is the supreme ruler over all the people and over all of creation. But more than that, my God is the creator of all things. When you break verse 9 down into the Hebrew language, that's what it says. Folks, God was steering this ship right where he wanted it to go. These sailors had been putting their faith in gods that did not exist, and God wanted them to know who he was so they might put their faith in him. And so how did they respond to Jonah's revelation of God? Verse 10. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, what is this you have done? For the men knew that Jonah was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. They realized that Jonah's sin against God was the cause of God pouring out his wrath on all of them. Verses 11 through 16. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked Jonah, What should we do to make the sea calm down for us? Jonah said, pick me up, throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you. And then verse 13 says, instead, the men did their best to row back to land. Now, granted, these men who worship false gods were showing more concern for human life than God's prophet was. But they were still trying to save themselves through their own efforts. Then it goes on to say, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. So as you think of that, who do you think it was that was causing this storm to get worse and worse as these men tried to save themselves? Obviously God. See, the truth of the matter was, they wasn't rowing against the storm. They was rowing against God. The storm was not their problem, God was. God was trying to cause an awakening to every person on that boat, whether it be for the sailors or for Jonah. A lot of the storms that we encounter in our lives are the work of God trying to get us to see Him as the divine storm calmer. Our natural reaction when the storms come is to try to escape the storm by our own wisdom, by our own strength. But God keeps that storm just coming because He's trying to get our attention. And it worked. Let's look at verses 14 through 16. Then they, the sailors, cried out to the Lord and said, O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man. For you, O Lord, have done as you pleased. Verse 15. Then they took Jonah, they threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. in verse 16, the men revered the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. So why did God let Jonah keep running? Because he had a boat full of sailors that he wanted to reveal himself to so that they would put their faith in him. Jonah might have thought he was getting away with rebellion, but God had something up his sleeve the whole time. Now, we're not told whatever become of those sailors, but my guess is that all the different seaports that they stopped at on their journey to Tarshish, they probably told people about the God they had encountered out on the sea. But I think there's still another reason why God let Jonah keep running. God had to let Jonah run like he did because it was the only way that Jonah could see or learn just how cold his heart had become. By God letting Jonah fall asleep in the midst of the storm, should have let Jonah know that he has gotten comfortable in his sin. Jonah sleeping while the sailors are up here on the deck perishing or fearful of perishing is a picture of a complacent Christian who just goes through life without any concern for the eternal destiny of the people around them. Jonah's description of God in verse 9 is interesting in this story because it lets us know that Jonah has a correct understanding of who God is. The reason Jonah did not want to go to Nineveh also shows us that Jonah had a correct understanding of the gospel. So Jonah's problem is not his knowledge, his problem is not his doctrine, his problem is not his beliefs, his problem is his heart. Jonah lacked a heart for God, he lacked a heart for God's will, and he lacked a heart for God's gospel. I think without a doubt that could also be a fair assessment of many Christians today. They have a correct understanding of who God is. They have a correct understanding of the gospel, but they do not allow it to motivate them to carry out God's great commission. I think in this day and age, when the church in America is lukewarm, churches are filled with Christians that probably have right theology, but a cold heart. When the sailors asked Jonah what they needed to do to calm the storm, he told them there in verse 12, he said, "Pick me up, throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you." That was Jonah's answer, but when I see Jonah's answer, I ask myself, what should it have been? His answer should have been something like, "Well, the storm is the consequences of me turning my back on God. And so if I would just cry out to God to forgive me, if I would just repent of my sin, if I would just say, Lord, I'll go to Nineveh, I think God will calm the storm." But there isn't anything in this story up to this point that indicates that Jonah had felt any guilt or remorse over what he was doing. Think about it. What does it say about Jonah? What does it say about Jonah's heart that he is willing to be thrown overboard and drown in the sea instead of repenting and getting right with God? Here's what it shows us. It shows us just how much we can believe in our own sinfulness, that we are willing sometimes to suffer the consequences, even if it means death. Jonah would rather drown than witness to the people of Nineveh. And sadly, I think that same thing could be said for a lot of Christians today. Proof of that would be people, Christians I've talked to over the years have been Christians for many, many, many years. And they can't tell you a single person they've ever shared the gospel with. Some people might say, well, maybe that's not the case. Maybe, just maybe Jonah had enough faith that if they threw him overboard, God would save him. The problem with that assumption is when someone is living in sin, when they are walking in rebellion, when they are running from God, when they're trying to hinder God's will, people with that heart condition don't have much faith in God. His heart had grown so cold that he was willing to die in this open sea over going to tell the people of Nineveh about the Lord. As I ended my message last week, the same thing I say this week. May we never become like Jonah in this story. And I close with this before we sing the final song. Maybe you are in the middle of a storm in your life as we speak. And God is just simply trying to get you to quit calming your storms through your own abilities and your own strength. Maybe you're in a storm and it just seems like the waves keep crashing in on you. No relief, it just gets worse. Maybe God is just trying to awaken you to His presence, to His abilities, to His character, to His willingness to step in and calm your storms. Maybe, if you're not a believer, if you've never given your life to the Lord, maybe the storms you're in is God awakening you to look to Him to deliver you from perishing in that storm. That He wants to provide you with a salvation that you'll never get on your own strength and your own efforts. If that is the case, I would encourage you to do like the sailors and begin to revere the Lord. The first step of revering the Lord is the step you take up to the cross and humble yourself and kneel before the Lord and say, Lord, I cannot survive the storm of life. I cannot survive the consequences of my sin. I'm asking you, Lord, to forgive me of my sin and come into my life and be my Lord and Savior. I would love to know, of course, God only tells us what we need to know. And I go back to something I said earlier. I would love to know what the sailors did with their message from there on out, after Jonah was thrown overboard and they spend about a year and a half sailing to Tarshish. They stop at numerous seaports along the way because they're merchant shipsmen. It would be interesting to know how much of the Word of God got presented through these men who know very little It is interesting, when we are young Christians, we're more likely to be on fire for the Lord than when we become older Christians. I can say that for myself. It'd be interesting to know, since these men, these sailors who put their faith in the Lord, they were merchant marines, that at some point within a few years, they probably come back to Joppa, the seaport where they first picked up Jonah, and they're probably asking the people around the town, hey, whatever happened to so-and-so? We threw him overboard. What happened? Because understand, at this point in time, they have no idea that Jonah survived this thing. Just adds to their testimony. As we sing this song, if you've never yielded your life over to the Lord, I encourage you to do that right here and right now. He has always got His arms open, ready to welcome you into His family.